I'm Julia Sherbakov, and this is Impact Journey. Conversations with hidden heroes making big societal change.
You know, when I came into this role, I was asking myself the same question. How am I going to convince these people that actually this is good for them? But you know what? Reality shows me, and I don't need to convince anyone. They all want to do this. Certainly the founders, the entrepreneurs, it's like they were waiting for this one investor who would tell them, we care about this. And we actually think it's an asset, not a liability.
Today, I'm happy to welcome Cecile Blulius. About her impact, Cecile is head of impact and sustainability at Patango, the biggest venture capital fund in Israel. Before that, she founded Impact First Investments, managed the Nober Foundation's Israeli investments, and had executive positions at several companies. Now, about her journey, I went into this conversation expecting to think about trade-offs, something I often hear in impact investing. So, impact or profit, people or planet, convincing people or finding a few who are ready. And Cecile's journey is so instructive because she shows that actually it's not either or, it's integrated. And a little discovery that I loved is that this sense of interconnection is actually linked to her martial arts background. So please enjoy this conversation with Cecile Blulius.
So the way I usually start is with a bit of background and your influences that got you to this point, because you now being responsible for impact and sustainability at the largest VC fund in Israel, but also I imagine before even the professional road, the personal influences that brought you here, because I now in your path, I see this thread of entrepreneurships and working with startups. I see this thread of impact, and I'm wondering where those threads begin in your life?
I think, first of all, personally, I have been training in martial arts for many, many years. And I have a teacher who has been my teacher for more than 25 years. It's been sort of a very long journey of just understanding who I am and what am I doing here. And I think this understanding that everything is interconnected, it's also made clear to me that what I want to do professionally in my career is something that must include everything connected with everything else and must include my values. It's a journey of looking at society and people around in a compassionate way, or at least trying to, looking at our planet as something that is ours to care for, but also ours to use. But I do believe that people have to be accountable for who they are and what they do, and their actions carry longer or further than their words. So that's probably why I'm doing what I'm doing.
And I'm so curious. So martial arts, what kind of martial arts do you do?
Tai Chi.
And how did you get into that?
Oh, wow. Actually, when I was 16, I watched a movie. I don't remember much about the movie, but I remember there was a young woman there and she was practicing, now I know it was probably some sort of Tai Chi. And she was being haunted by this regime that was chasing her and putting her in jail and all that kinds of things. And she was very resilient and very strong and they just couldn't break her. And then I forgot about it, obviously. And in 1988, I was assigned to go and live in Japan. I worked at the Israeli embassy there. And the first day that I came to the embassy, people asked me, so is there something that you'd like to learn about Japan, about the culture? And I said, well, there's this thing that you do all these movements. Can I learn this? And they said, oh, sure. It's not Japanese. It's Chinese, but it's being taught here. So if you'd like, it's called Tai Chi, or in Japanese, Tai Kyoken. And the same day I went to my first practice and I stayed on it since.
Oh, that's so interesting. And I didn't even know you spent time in Japan.
I did. I spent 4 years in Japan and had two children there. My first two daughters were born in Japan.
So you've had a very international life, and it's really interesting that you actually connect what you had learned through Tai Chi and how then that connects to your personal values of who you are as a person and who you want to be, and then how you bring that into your work. Like you said, I imagine that didn't necessarily come naturally or immediately. How did your role evolve over time? Like, how did you figure out what your place was in that, where you got hints of, okay, this is the right direction?
Well, so first of all, it's nice that you're assuming that I know where I'm going or what I'm doing. And one thing that I do know is that we're all on a sort of a path. You know, in the Jewish scriptures, there's a saying that says that the path is smarter than the one who walks it. So I was an entrepreneur and I went through the dot-com bubble burst, which we all came out of totally bruised. And I was very lucky to be working with Paul Bahn from the Bahn family, who founded the Nober Foundation. Paul said to me, I think that something went wrong in the alignment of capital and values. How about we build a team that thinks about how to realign those? Would you like to join? And I said, of course. It was totally up my alley. And I joined the Nober Foundation team and we started thinking about exactly that, aligning capital, values, and tech in our case, because we were always tech entrepreneurs and investors. I'm talking about the early 2000s. So it was way beyond the term impact investing was even minted, impact measurement, all these things you can Google now. And how do we find the path that will bring the most value with the least amount of effort? So This is, again, a concept from martial arts. We landed on these thoughts and ideas that eventually became what is now called impact investing and venture philanthropy and social venturing and all that stuff. I was really very lucky to be at the right place at the right time. And then thinking about, okay, so what is the role of Israel in all of this? Because I'm based in Israel, which is known as the startup nation. So we have more than 6,000 startups here at any given moment. For such a small country, it's a lot. So how do we link that? And how do we take technology? How do we use that as a power to do positive things? And what's the relationship between technology and impact? And can impact be also negative? So that's where you say, okay, here is where I'm being the entrepreneur and I'm changing the way that things are done to be more aligned with how I think things should be.
Yeah. And I'm so glad that you connect those pieces together, going all the way back to your background as an entrepreneur to eventually then support other entrepreneurs and knowing what they're going through. That's one. But two, to see what didn't work, as you were saying, having lived through the dot-com bubble burst, you know, what was wrong with the system and how can we now fix that? And then three, I love this element of you being an entrepreneur almost in this new system, creating things that don't exist in the way businesses are funded. And so it's interesting, you're being this like triple type of entrepreneur that's quite different than the entrepreneur you were before, but you're bringing all those skills to your current job.
Absolutely. You know, entrepreneurs, if there's one thing that you can say about them is that when they don't like reality, they try to change it. And sometimes it means banging your head against the wall. I mean, I'm pretty sure that I have this flat place here on my forehead of banging my head against the wall for all these years, but we never stopped trying. And even in the work that I currently do, which is in Israel's largest venture capital fund, like this big, big ship, still, my role is very entrepreneurial. I have to reinvent a lot of the things that are just not there. And this is the beauty of it.
I'm glad you gave the history of your involvement in impact investing. And this is why I was so excited to talk to you, because I've had a few people on the podcast talking about different sides of impact investing. And I'd love to play a little bit of that back to you, because it can mean everything and mean nothing. And so I'd love to also get your take on it as it evolved over time, because it's become this term for anywhere that money moves. That can be the stock market, you know, investing in big companies. So I had Chad on the show who was at BlackRock and was doing that there, all the way to investing in startup and smaller companies. So I had Nick from Union Square Ventures on here talking about that. I can also go apply to how countries invest. So I had Heike from the World Bank, all the way to investing in community institutions. So I had Jennifer from Calvert Impact Capital, all the way to how each of us personally invests our own pension and retirement savings. So I had Duncan from Climate Invest, who created a tool to invest in climate. And so given that it can mean all of these different things, I'm curious how you've seen what impact investing even means evolve over the time that you've been in the space.
Yes. So people thought at the beginning that impact investing is its own asset class. And very quickly, people understood that it's not really an asset class. What it is a mindset. And that explains all of these examples that you just gave, just go to show that it is a mindset. So if you are personally a person who cares about our planet and our society, then as an individual who has a pension fund, you will request your pension fund managers to invest your money into companies and stocks and bonds and whatnot that actually serve the purpose that you want them to serve. And if you go to work for a corporate, you will prefer to work for a corporate that is accountable accountable for its impact on society. You don't want to work for a company that dumps its waste or that pollutes the water or that uses slaves as part of its supply chain. And then when you go out, you'll probably prefer eating food that was grown not too far from the table that you're served. Now, if you're an asset owner, let's say that you have not only your pension fund, but you actually have substantial wealth, you can really make a dent in how money is being deployed around the world. And that leads you to look at your own personal portfolio as something that can be 100% impact. And actually that is being driven by Charlie Kleisner with the Tonic movement, where people are looking at their own portfolios saying, if I invest in stocks, I want them to be impact driven. If I invest in bonds, same. If I invest in real estate, it's the same. You can do impact real estate. So impact is a mindset. And like you said, it can be everything and it can be nothing. And that's where the challenge really is. And I think this is also the reason why the venture capital industry, which is a very data-driven industry, is very late to the game. And you don't see a lot of venture capital funds in impact investing. Even the numbers, $715 billion in 2019 in the impact investing space, probably less than $2 billion are spent on VC, on technology companies. So that doesn't make sense. And one of the reasons I think is that people think it's kind of a fluff thing. Everything can be impact, saying, yeah, well, of course, Apple is an impact company because if I have a phone, I can call my grandma. And because I can call my grandma, I create impact. So I say, let's focus on what can be measured. And what can be measured? In our world, so far, two major things. One is the ESG methodology, how you run your business, how you hire your people, how you compensate them, how you make sure that they're not being harassed or mistreated in any way. How do you source your material? Where does it come from? And on the G side, how do you actually run your board, preventing fraud and corruption? These are things that are very empirical. Then the next phase is the Sustainable Development Goals are these 17 goals that were designed by the UN. And what part of the global goal you are targeting as a company or as an organization, even if it's a nonprofit. And there you have the exact way of how you build a clear business path to how you build your business with clear KPIs, which can be a derivative of the SDGs. So again, let's not talk impact and sustainability. Let's instead talk about ESG and SDG in a measurable way. And then when you do that, you actually build much better companies in the financial side. So this is another hurdle or another pain point of the impact industry, that even though there is already quite a lot of evidence and research that shows that ESG funds and SDG driven companies are actually more profitable, or at least as profitable as non-SDG or ESG funds, I'm very fortunate to work in a domain of venture capital and high tech where this is actually not only feasible, it's actually very, very doable and has been proven. But it's not necessarily true for every asset class. So you need to be honest about what you want and can achieve and what targets you're putting out there so you can really achieve both.
Yeah. And I'm so glad to start to bring in some of those things that feel like trade-offs in this space of impact investing. And some of them are false trade-offs. You talked about the impact versus profit. Another one that I hear a lot is people versus planet, where historically sustainability meant more planet and environment, and social impact, social enterprise meant focusing on the people. And what's really interesting about your work is that you work not just in impact investing, but impact investing in technology startups. And you would think it would be more on the planet side, but a lot of your work has actually been focused so much on the people side as well. So health and education and investing in underrepresented communities. And so I'm curious how you influence others also from seeing it as this either or, to actually they're completely interconnected. You can't think of one without the other.
Now, environmental and social are not contradicting. They're complementary. Again, my perception that everything is connected. I'm a little bit concerned about this separation. It's very artificial. You also see it on these beautiful movies that you see on Netflix and elsewhere, where you see Saving Our Planet, etc. But there's no single human being in those movies. Okay, so how about we all save the planet and we stop farming, we stop using the forest, but then how are we going to live? People need to eat. They need to live somewhere. I mean, you just can't take one without the other. It's just balance is the key word here.
And I'm curious, do you have an example in mind of either a company you've invested in or that you have worked with in the past where we can see that balance in play?
So actually one of the flagship companies of Pitango, a company called Via. Via is a transportation company. It's actually a unicorn. It's a huge company. It's in the business of ride sharing. So you look at ride sharing, it might not occur to you that actually a company like this could have an impact, but actually a lot. If you think about transportation, first of all, if you use public transportation instead of cars, then you reduce the amount of congestion that you have, particularly in the city centers. Then by reducing the amount of cars, you reduce the carbon emissions, so the air becomes clearer. The city centers can build more parks and less parking lots. So that's on the environmental side. But now let's think about transportation as a tool for social equity. And let's think about people that are living in transportation deserts, or people that need to take 3 buses to get to work, or people that never have a bus on time so they can't stick to a job, or they can't access education because they can't get on time to the school, or they can't take their kid to the doctor because they only have a bus twice a day. So here you have a company that's not only creating opportunities to reduce carbon emission and really clean up the air, you also have the same company providing social mobility for people and access to where they didn't have it before. So all of a sudden, when you look at a company through the lens of the social and environmental impact that they can make, you see that they're all interconnected.
Yeah, this also leads to this other challenge and trade-off that I see often with impact investing, which is this sense of incrementalism versus whole scale mindset shift. It can be relatively easy to like pat yourself on the back when something is made just a little bit better, or you can cut the numbers in a way to say we're helping this many people. And yet the companies and the organizations and the funds that are really furthest ahead on this, they are never happy. I mean, for example, I had Ryan Gellert, who's now the CEO of Patagonia, on this podcast. And Patagonia is, if you think of a company that's leading, most of our conversation is the things that they're not doing, that they should be doing more of, that they should be doing better. And so what I'm curious for you is, now that you're kind of this entrepreneur inside of a much bigger ship, how do you think about moving people along that continuum to make sure that there's not a complacency that sets in?
That's where I refer to a term that I coined, which I call impact natives and impact migrants. So to me, impact natives are the early stage companies, the ones that are born into impact, the ones who would never do anything outside of impact. That's their raison d'être, but they're the minority. So if we stick only with the impact natives, then we have a very long way to go until we can fix this planet and this society. So instead, let's also add another category, which I call the impact migrants. And who are those? Those are the Vias of the world, large companies that have already received investments. Their investors are not thinking that they're going to be compromising their financial returns. And let's look at their business and their product through the impact lens, through the social and environmental lens. If you do this professionally and you integrate this seriously within the business practices of the company, in a pretty short period of time, you can have massive companies that are actually creating intentional positive impact that keeps improving. I cannot stress enough how important it is to do it in an authentic way. Any marketing can do seemingly a sort of migration process, but if it's not really embedded into the company DNA and into the company structure, and it doesn't have the buy-in of the company founders and management team, then it's never going to happen. It's just words. So we as investors and all of us as consumers should really look at the companies that are trying to sell us the idea of impact and check if that's for real, or is it just talk? And on the incremental side, I'm teaching the investment teams on how to review new companies through adding the impact and sustainability lens to what they're already looking at. So we are already now including new companies that we're just making new investments in, but the way that we screen these companies and what we require from them already includes this continuum of first ESG, and if possible, then SDG where relevant. So I think this is how you work incrementally on one hand, and also revolutionary on the other hand, so that you can really build a real solution to the problems we're facing, but fast.
And I'm curious about this because so much of the evolution of the organization, whether they're the impact natives or the impact migrants, their success really depends on the willingness of the people in the leadership there. And so in that sense, I'm curious, how do you work on that people side, embedding that sense of belief so that when times do get tough, this doesn't get left on the sidelines?
So two things. Number one, I tackle the problem through the pain points that are the most important for VCs and for entrepreneurs, and that we will make more money.
Yeah.
So actually, if we build a company that abides to ESG and SDG, we will reduce the risks and also make more money, because our employees will get the best talent in company.
So you speak their language.
That you have to. Our brands will benefit from it, and they'll be more loyal to us. And our investors will unlock capital, because it's just good business. So first, you have to speak the language of the people that you're speaking with. And number two, you know, when I came into this role, I was asking myself the same question. How am I going to convince these people that actually this is good for them? But you know what? Reality shows me, and I don't need to convince anyone. They all want to do this. Certainly the founders, the entrepreneurs, and the management teams of companies, it's like they were waiting for this one investor who would tell them, we care about this. And we actually think it's an asset, not a liability. And internally, I don't have to convince the partners here that this is the right thing to do. They were the ones who came to me and said, we want to do this. We just don't know how. They're just waiting for someone to come in and do it professionally, seriously, in a way that they can embed and speaks their language. So I've been an entrepreneur. I led companies. I was an investor. I mean, this is my turf. This is my tribe.
Yeah, it's great because it actually kind of connects full circle to your story and what's brought you here, but also where your own interests, your own skills, your own internal values also matches up to what's needed. And other people are asking this of you and are ready. So it's really interesting to hear that the environment around you has evolved, how you've evolved in it, and how you've been this catalyst.
Yeah. Thank you, Judah, for having me. I think, you know, your role in spreading the news and bringing this to everyone has a critical role in educating people. People do need to feel that they're not alone and that there is a community. I'm inviting any impact tech entrepreneur and investor to join the GITA community, the Global Impact Tech Alliance community. Be a member of a community of people who think like you and really do spread the word. Your role in this is, I can't stress enough how important it is. So thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, well, thank you.
A big thanks to Cecile. You can follow her work in the links in the show notes. This is Impact Journey. See you next time.